Together. God, we thank you so much for this time that we have had to just celebrate you and to be silly and have fun doing it, God. And I thank you for the gift of this song and the gift of VBS, Lord, that we get to learn about you more in that opportunity, God. And I just thank you for this time that we get to celebrate you, God. Would you help to guide us and teach us something new during this time, God? We praise you and we thank you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Good job. Give these ladies a round of applause. That one's mine. That's why I kicked her. Good morning, everybody. My name is Nick Bradley. I'm one of the pastors here, First Baptist Church of Clovis. I got to tell you, as these little sailor ladies head on out, I know that that is not your normal worship style. To the left, left. Turn, right? And I get that, but this is a great opportunity for them to practice what it's like to stand up here. You're nothing compared to 450, that sounded bad. You're nothing compared to 450 little kids out there all doing it left and right, singing together. VBS is just such a, it's become such a wonderful blessing that God has given this church to be able to have 450 kids here on campus, 170, 80 volunteers. A church of our size might normally have 100 kids or something. So God is really doing something. And so to have this many volunteers up here and that many kids out there, thank you for letting them practice on you and for welcoming them. And this is just what we do here as a church family. So you're really in for a treat because we have a guest speaker today. Today, in case you didn't know, is our mission moment, the third Sunday of every month. We started at the beginning of the year of letting you know, the church family, who our mission partners are, where 10% of all of our tithes and offerings go to help support the work that God calls us to do as Christians all over the world, here locally and abroad, and in many different ways, whether it's sharing the gospel directly, doing social justice, or in today's case, really being on the front lines of the pro-life movement. Josh Brom, a good close personal friend of mine that I met when he lived in Fresno a few years back, he became the president, really started the organization of the Equal Rights Institute. He's one of the organizations that we support. You, by the way, can find out the list of the 12 organizations that we support on a permanent basis. We do revisit that list every 2 or 3 years, and at any time you can go to the Connection Center and grab that brochure that was created so that you can see who we give to, because who we give to kind of also helps us know who we are and what we support. But Josh Brom, he started the Equal Rights Institute because, and I don't want to steal his thunder, he's going to share it, but he has a different way of approaching this argument. A lot of people who argue the pro-life debate start getting contentious or combative, and Josh just sort of hit the reset button and said, there's got to be a better way. And he's going to share with you how he does that and how effective it is. When you actually discuss with someone openly about their ideas and your ideas, and then shockingly, maybe become their friend in the process. And he's been doing this for many years, probably a decade to two decades now. I don't know exactly how old he is, so. But he's been doing this for a long time, does a really good job. He's spoken in 18 different states, 5 different countries, and this is his 200th location that he's coming to share with. He lives in North Carolina, and when we told him, hey, can you make a video and explain what you do for our mission moment that we do every month, maybe 3 to 5 minutes, and he said, yeah, I can do that, or I could fly out. I would love to just fly out because you guys have been supportive of us for so long, and it would be the least I could do to say thank you. And I said, sure, if you'd like to fly out here. He met with the staff years ago, and that's what and board and helped us really figure out this is someone whose organization we want to support, because he's having an effect on the front lines of college campuses, tens of thousands of people being trained by him. He literally goes all over the world to train people to lovingly reach people for Jesus Christ, but using the medium of the pro-life topic. So we are blessed to have him. Please, First Baptist Church of Clovis, give a nice warm round of applause and welcome Josh Braun.
Thanks. It's so good to be here today. I've been wanting to speak at this church for years, and now my face is on Rubik's Cubes. This is the most surreal moment of my life. I was in the Denver airport several years ago on a layover. I was on my way home, and I sat across from a businesswoman in her late 30s. I had just enough time to eat my sandwich and get on my plane, so I was just sitting at my gate. And she opened the conversation by asking me the question that I spent my entire career hating. What do you do for a living? See, here's the problem. I've got a weird job, and it's like, how do I respond to this in a way, assuming she's pro-choice, that is not going to get this whole conversation started off on the wrong foot, where, like, she's mad at me from the word go. And so I answered her question in a way that I'd never said before, and this has become almost the only way that now I respond to this question. So she said, what do you do for a living? I said, I try to help pro-life people to be less weird. And she smiled a little bit and said, what's that mean? I said, well, I'm trying to help pro-life people to make more good arguments and fewer bad ones. And maybe more importantly, I want to help us to connect relationally with people who are different from us, with people who are coming from a different political or religious background. So 4 years ago, my brother Tim, a philosophy grad from Biola, came to Fresno, and we were going to spend a week working on our first book. That was our plan. Like, you know what they say about what happens when you make plans, right? God laughs. And so we spent a whole half a day working on the book. And then Tim said something that would change our lives. He said the pro-life movement is not known for its love. That just kind of stopped us cold. We just kind of processed that. And then I said, we're not known for being a real thoughtful group of people either. So we've got two really big problems if we're going to affect culture. And so we ended up spending the rest of that week not working on the book, but thinking about what is the pro-life movement missing? What are we lacking, and what are we particularly gifted at, and where do those things overlap on like a Venn diagram? And we dreamed up Equal Rights Institute. So we have a mission statement. We train pro-life advocates to think clearly, reason honestly, and argue persuasively. But the heart behind that is this. We want to help pro-life people to be more like Jesus. I am fascinated by this question. What would it look like if Jesus talked to a pro-choice person? Like, what would his body language be like? What kinds of questions would he ask? What kinds of questions would he not ask? And what would it sound like when Jesus made arguments that are grounded in truth, but are spoken with gentleness and grace? I think my life's mission is to help the pro-life movement get closer to that mark. And so basically I'm saying I want us to live out Colossians 4, 5 through 6. Conduct yourselves with wisdom toward outsiders, making the most of the opportunity. Let your speech always be filled with grace, as though seasoned with salt, so that you will know how you should respond to each person. That's what I want to do. And so part of the reason I'm here is to thank you. Because this is the first church to support us on a monthly basis. You've been supporting this ministry since almost the beginning at a very generous level. For most of ERI's existence, you have funded, you've paid about 5% of our expenses. So I don't think you can understand, unless you run a nonprofit, how much I like you. I am so grateful to this church. I don't know where we would be without you, but you have had not just a small impact, but a very significant impact on us and being able to do this. So I'm going to spend a little bit of time bragging, giving you a sense of what we do, and I want you to be excited, and I'm going to spend the bulk of my time sharing with you a few of the things that we've been learning, because I want to help you to have better dialogues with people, whether it's about abortion, or whether it's about your faith, or whether it's about Dodgers versus Giants, like whatever that thing is, that contentious topic is, like I want you to be able to have good conversations with people. But I'll tell you a few things going on. Nick said, you should really share with people some testimonials, some people that have been helped by your work. And so I brought the last two things that people have sent us just in the last couple of weeks. Just last week, this lady sent a handwritten thank you note to our office, just out of the blue. Who writes thank you notes anymore? But she sent us a note, so I'm just going to read to you. She said, I absolutely love all you are doing. Thank you so much for your ministry. So far, I've really benefited from the ERI podcast and the Equip for Life teaching videos. I thought I was solid in pro-life apologetics before, but you've opened my eyes to so much more, especially bodily rights arguments. I've been taught almost exclusively on proving the unborn's humanity. So this idea of people conceding that point and still believing abortion is acceptable is newer to me. Thanks for equipping me to think better and communicate more effectively and ask better questions. And then I just got an email from Denmark. So I was just in Denmark. I was 3 weeks ago or maybe 4 weeks ago now. I was in Denmark. It was this really cool thing where, so Denmark, totally socialist, 5% pro-life. Imagine being a pro-lifer in Denmark. Like, they don't even talk about the issue. Like, here in America, every vice presidential debate, abortion comes up. Not in Denmark. Nope. They think it's a settled issue. They're talking about immigration and other things that they think are actually relevant. They feel like no one should talk about abortion anymore. So the Denmark Right to Life group, to their credit, said, we're not as effective as we could be. So they went to the three youngest leaders of the organization and said, find your favorite pro-life person on the globe. We'll fly that person here and have that person train us and help us to get more effective. And so they brought me. There's the one girl, Agnita. It took me forever to learn how to pronounce her name correctly, because it's spelled Agnete. So for the longest time, but it's Agnita. Anyway, so she'd been watching me from back when I worked here, back even before ERI. She'd been following me for about 6 years, and so they flew me out, and I spent a couple of days doing speaking and a lot of, probably 4 or 5 hours of Q&A and, a strategy and private consulting meetings with their leadership and, in their specific cultural context, how could they be most effective? It was awesome, but anyway, so I've been back for a few weeks, and I just got an email from them, from Anita, to give me an update. So he says, hi, Josh, some cool stuff happened that I just wanted to share with you. Since you were here, I've been approached by two different journalists from the Danish Public Service radio and TV station. One wanted a radio interview about what it's like to be pro-life in Denmark. The other one wants to produce a TV documentary and needed a video for her pitch. So awesome. Anyway, I totally ripped off your equality approach, selling it as a human rights issue, and the effect was so apparent. That was not what either of them expected, and they were intrigued. I also spent time talking about how pro-choice people have good intentions and care about women, and how I don't think that women take abortions lightly and that most actually have very understandable reasons for not wanting the child. I hardly presented many actual arguments on that particular call, or at least I didn't go into depth. There wasn't that much time. And part of me was going, what are you doing, Anita? Just get to the killer arguments. They won't take you seriously. But I chose to ignore that impulse and focus on showing them that I'm a normal and compassionate person, and it really paid off. So I just want to say thank you, because if I hadn't discovered you guys, I would not have taken that approach, and I think it was exactly what the situation called for. In fact, one of them even said, wow, you sound just like a normal person, and not like the religious freak we thought you would be. He goes on to say, I'm looking forward to doing my first real outreach on June 9th. There will be a counter demonstration by a feminist group called My Body, My Decision, which is both really cool and kind of terrifying. I hope we can engage them in dialogue and that they won't cause any trouble trying to prevent people from talking to us. In any case, it means they take us seriously enough to bother showing up. Anyway, thanks again for all your great work. I will keep you posted on how it all plays out. So what's cool about that trip for me was, like, usually when I travel around the country or like Canada lately, it's like I'm speaking for a group. I'm speaking at a bunch of schools or whatever. But here, we're influencing the entire Denmark pro-life movement. Like, they've got this little handbook, and I'm so mad that I didn't bring it. I didn't even think that would be great to bring until this morning during the first service. I'm like, ugh. Anyway, it's all in Danish, though, so I don't understand a word of it. But they told me, they're like, I hope you're okay with it. We didn't ask you, but we basically just ripped off all your arguments and put it in this little booklet. And I was like, that's fine. It's cool. Like we've really, like, they're just kind of doing our thing, our approach, and they're seeing it have effect. And so I'll just give you a couple of statistics because this is thanks in no small part to you. Since launching, we've given 115 speeches in 14 seminars. We've published 87 articles, which have been read over 235,000 times by people around the world. We've published 112 podcasts, and our course is right now being taken by 386 individuals, plus 52 groups of 20 doing it together, and 6 groups of 40. So I am really grateful to you for making this possible. And I could go on for hours. If you just asked me about, like, what are the future things we're working on? Oh my gosh, I'm so excited about some of the things we're working on, but I'm gonna stop. I want you to be excited, but more importantly, I would like to help you this morning. I would like to try to share with you a little bit about what we've been learning. So I'd like to share with you 4 practical dialogue tips and talk to you a little bit about what we mean by relational apologetics. Because if you ask me, like, how do you do your mission? How do you train pro-life advocates to think clearly, reason honestly, and argue persuasively? I'd say that we use speaking, writing, campus outreach, and now this online course to focus on mainly 3 areas. These are the 3 categories that we like to talk about the most. One of them is practical dialogue tips. So our staff has cumulatively had about 5,000 conversations with pro-choice people. And we've learned a lot of things. We've learned from a lot of mistakes. But what we've been trying to figure out is how do you, on a contentious issue like this, how do you get this person to truly hear us? What are the little nitty-gritty things that we do that helps create an environment in the conversation where the person feels receptive and not defensive? So we've learned a lot of little tricks to doing that. So I'll share like 4 of them with you, but our blog is full of them. We've got dozens and dozens of them on the blog. I'll share like 4 of my favorites with you this morning. We also talk about pro-life philosophy. There are some really good and persuasive pro-life arguments. There are also some true pro-life arguments that are not very persuasive to most pro-choice people, just because they're coming from a different worldview. And then there are some pro-life arguments that are just really bad, like don't use them. So we talk about that. And we also talk about relational apologetics, the art of cultivating friendships with people who are different from you. And I'll talk a little bit about that today, too. So let me give you 4 practical dialogue tips, just things that could help you to talk about any issue. These are probably right now what I would consider the most important, and we've been talking about them for a long time. So one of them is to ask clarification questions a lot. Because when you're talking to someone, I think what happens a lot of times, especially if you like to debate, you get to where you feel like you know what's going on for them. I know what's going on for him. I've got the peek into his soul, you know. And maybe even tell them what you think that they think. And that's really obnoxious. You don't want to do that. So what we ought to do is just like ask a bunch of questions. Don't ask them all in a row, because that can be well-intentioned, but it can come across like you're like a prosecutor and they're on the witness stand, or like it's a police interrogation. You got to be careful. But I'm asking a lot of questions, especially early in the conversation, because I want to understand what's going on for this person. Like, you call yourself pro-choice. I don't know what in the world that means to you. I've talked to over 1,000 pro-choice people, and they all most of them describe themselves as pro-choice, and all of them meant slightly different things. So I don't care what the last person to call themselves pro-choice meant. I want to know what you mean. What is going on for you? When you say you're pro-choice, like, flesh that out for me. You get more specific. I basically have learned nothing. You know, what is going on for you? You said that you think abortion should only be legal in the first trimester. That's a very common view for pro-choice people. What do you think about the other trimesters? Like, do you think that it should be illegal to have abortions after the first trimester, or just like it's just immoral? Do you think that there are any reasons that women should not be able to choose abortion, like sex selection, or do you think all of those reasons are legitimate? Like, these are all, I'm just gathering information. My friend Jonathan Fincher said that we should be like information gathering detectives of people. Like, we're trying to really get to know them and what's going on for them. And that'll give you even the chance to refute their arguments. You can't refute an argument if you don't understand it first. You're just going to strawman it. They're going to respond to some dumb, lame version of it that's not what's going on in their heads, which will just annoy them and end the conversation. Don't do that. Ask them some questions first. Hold back. And listen to understand, not to refute them. This is really hard. Because what happens a lot for us, for probably everybody in this room, this is probably not just like most of you, this is probably all of us, is when we're talking to people, we have an inner monologue going on in our head. This is the little voice that's like telling me what I should say next. You know what I'm talking about? This is what mine sounds like. Like, I'll be talking to a pro-choice person, and in my head, I've got this voice that's like, this isn't really fair how many things that she's saying in a row. Like, she's been talking for a long time. And she's dropped like 8 different arguments. Which one should I respond to? Should I respond to the first thing that she said, or the last thing that she said, or the thing that would be the easiest to refute, or the thing that would be the seems to be the most important to her? I'm hungry. What was that errand that my wife wanted me to run before I come home tonight? That's not listening. And I learned this. Several years ago, I had to have some really important conversations with my wife because I built up this dumb husband habit. So guys, listen up. This one's for free. So I would get home from work, and my wife and I would be talking about each other's days, and see, you'd be usually making dinner around now, and she'd be telling me about her day sometimes, and I would be on my phone browsing Facebook. Oh, listen to the judgment in this room right now. Like, judge not, lest you be judged. Here's the thing. It was so innocent. I thought I was listening because I could tell that she was, you know, talking. Like, I was, like, following the themes. I basically grossly overestimated my ability to multitask. But then she would ask me a comprehensive question, and I would fail miserably. And she'd be really frustrated, as she rightly should have been. I wasn't being very loving. Here's the thing. It's so obvious to everybody in this room that I shouldn't be browsing Facebook while my wife's talking to me. And this is a pretty mindless activity. And yet, all of us, unless there's any saints in the room, probably all of us, will be talking about important, deep subjects with people, and we have an inner voice going on in our head, and we think it's fine. You can't truly listen that way. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to turn that voice off. I'm trying to put it on mute, silence it. And so what that looks like, if I'm doing this well, if I'm having a good day, it means that I'm talking to this pro-choice person, and she's talking to me, and I am just present in the moment with her. I don't have a voice going like, what am I going to say next? I'm just focusing all of my mental and emotional attention on her and what she is saying. And then when she's done, I might need to take a beat and process because I haven't been setting up my next move, right? I might have to take a moment. And a pro-life person watching might be like, ooh, man, that was an awkward pause. No, it's an awesome pause because it shows her what? It shows her that I'm taking her seriously. It shows I'm taking her views seriously, and people are not used to having their views taken seriously. We could change that paradigm. Like, this is especially true of, like, Christian conservatives. People don't expect Christian conservatives to listen to them, really. But what if pro-life people became known as people who take pro-choice views really seriously, take the other side's views really seriously? Here's what that would do. That would force everybody who is pro-choice, who has a shred of intellectual honesty, to take our views more seriously in return. Here's why. If you know that someone has really thought about the smartest arguments on both sides of an issue and then picked one of them, you kind of want to know why. Like, it's not just that they kind of fell into it. It's not just because their parents or their church did it. It's like, no, they like really studied it and then they picked one. Like, they would want to know, why are you not pro-choice if you've heard better pro-choice arguments than even I have? So listen to understand. Another one is to find genuine common ground when possible. My friend Steve Wagner wrote a wonderful little book on this called Common Ground and Abortion. It's got 25 questions in it where you can often find common ground with pro-choice people. And it's great. He's got this really helpful analogy in it where he talks about how it's kind of like fuel in a car if you're going to go on a road trip. So if you're going to go on a road trip, you're going to start by getting some gas. And then you're going to drive for a few hours, and then you're going to take a pit stop and get some more gas, and you're going to keep going. That's kind of like what common ground does in a conversation. See, pro-choice people don't think that we're going to find any common ground. Because if you see pro-lifers on the news, it's usually the most weird of us. Like, that's just the way it is. And so they're expecting a very particular kind of thing if they come and talk to me, like, on their college campus. And I'm playing good cop, bad cop with the caricature of the pro-life movement that's in their head. It's actually an advantage. They're intrigued when it doesn't go as badly as they think it's going to go. And by finding common ground, whenever it comes up, I'm kind of indicating to them, oh, we're not polar opposites. Maybe we actually could have a reasonable conversation if we can agree on these different things. And so every single time they say something that I agree with, I'm either verbally pointing out that common ground, like, oh, I like what you said there. Oh, yeah, I agree with that, things like that. Or at least non-verbally, like with body language, you know. I'm pointing those things out. And sometimes I'm purposely bringing up things that I expect that we're going to find common ground on, just to bring more of that common ground in, and then we talk about the things that we disagree about. Really helps the conversation. And the last thing I'll offer is just something that is so important. It kind of proves that you've actually been listening. I was actually talking about this with someone after the last service. Is to rephrase what they said. See, when people are talking and we're listening to them, even if we're doing a good job listening, there's a reason that sometimes miscommunication happens, is our brain is automatically doing this process. It's kind of like Google Translate. Have you ever seen those funny videos on YouTube where someone takes the lyrics of a song like Let It Go from Frozen and they put it in Google Translate, like from English to Spanish and then Spanish to French and then French back to English, and then they get the track and they sing the new lyrics to it. And it's always hilarious because Google Translate's not perfect, especially when you make it go through a couple of iterations. So this happens to us. We can be listening to someone, but our brain is retranslating it to us, and sometimes it just gets the translation a little bit wrong. But we want to make clarity completely our responsibility. Clarity is your friend. And so a lot of times if they've said some really important things, I want to make sure I've accurately understood it, I'm going to say, okay, before I respond to that, let me stop and see if I'm accurately understanding your view. I'm going to tell you back what I hear you saying, and you tell me if I get anything wrong. And then I'm going to try to put it in my own words and then see what they say. And they might make me redo it a couple of times before to get it right. Like, they might correct me, and that's great, because we're finding more clarity. They know that I understand their view before I go to refute it. They know that I'm not strawmanning. We've agreed, okay, we all agree on what the view is, and then we can talk about it. So rephrase what they said. So I want to talk to you a little bit about relational apologetics. So 7 years ago, I got invited into the secret Facebook debate group. That sounds a lot weirder than I mean it to be. Like, it's secret. It's like, that's the word that Facebook uses for, like, it's a kind of a Facebook group that you can't search. You got to be invited in. So it's not like it's covert, you know, thing. But anyway, I got invited to this abortion debate group. It was like me and two other pretty active pro-lifers, and about seven pretty active pro-choice people, and then like 10 that were just watching. And I spent about a year there. I averaged about an hour a day. I couldn't do that right now. I'm busier now than I was back then. But back then, I was doing about an hour a day. And I just thought of it at the beginning as an interesting kind of a social experiment. I had never spent more than 2 hours with a pro-choice person before. You know, we do outreach on usually college campuses. So we have great conversations with people that will sometimes last a few hours, but then they're gone. I'll try to give my card to people and get them to connect with me. They never do. And so here is, like, these are the same people. Like, I still remember them. Jessica and Ronnie and Kara and Kira. Those are two different people. I remember I was getting to get a sense of what makes them tick. Like, there were other pro-lifers that ended up getting banned from the group, like kind of annoyed the pro-choice people, but they weren't annoyed by me and Chris. And so I'm, like, getting a sense of, like, what's really going on for them? So I just thought it was an interesting social experiment. But it affected me in a different way. Eventually, I got to see how some people can only change their minds through relationship. Like, we had a lot of time. I got about 300 hours with those people before it kind of imploded. What other evangelistic tool do you get 300 hours with someone besides actually being friends with them? And we became friends. Like, we had, like, this rule, free forum Fridays. You weren't allowed to talk about abortion on Fridays. You would have, is kind of idea like, just make each other not avatars. So talk about what movies you're into, TV shows, or whatever. But it actually got really deep and really personal really fast. People were talking about their miscarriages. People were talking about abuse they were suffering from their boyfriends. Like, it got very, very personal, okay, into each other's lives. And so I started thinking about how important relationship is going to be for some people. Not everybody. Some people change their minds with that relationship. We see people change their mind on campuses. But there's certain people where that's not going to work for them. They need more. They need relationships. I'll give you one example. So Deanna emails me several years ago and identifies as a pro-choice atheist lesbian in Canada. So you wouldn't think that we'd have a lot in common, being that she's from Canada. So Deanna, but we did have a lot in common. Like, we had similar senses of humor. We're both into philosophy. We're both open-minded. That's enough to build a relationship on, a friendship. And so she emails me. She saw me on YouTube, and it's like God brought us to each other in, like, the perfect time, because I just spent, like, 2 years with some really, smarter philosophy people than I am, thinking about the certain kind of bodily rights argument and trying to solve a problem. And that's what she needed. Like, she's really into bodily rights arguments. So I'm not going to explain what that even means right now, but you should get on our email list, and it's really important, but I don't have time. So she emails me, like, an essay of why she's pro-choice, and all has to do with bodily rights arguments. And I could tell that she was smart and open-minded. That's a pretty unusual combination. When you find someone that is those two things, jump on that opportunity, because magic can happen with smart, open-minded people. And so I emailed her back. I said, you're awesome. I would love to talk to you. And I picked one thing that she had said and responded to it. And 127 emails later, and they were, like, deep emails. Like, we got really, it got pretty nerdy pretty fast. I'm, like, having to phone a friend to, like, philosophy people. Like, what do we say? Anyway, 127 emails later, we began Skyping. And that really helped. It was just more personal. So we talked about abortion a lot, but we also, like, she'd ask me about how my wife and kids are doing. I'm talking to her about her when she moved out of her parents' house. She's walking me through and kind of asking me about this terrifying process of starting a ministry and support raising for the first time. I was there to grieve with her when her grandmother died. Her first close family death after becoming an atheist. As you can imagine, we talked about same-sex marriage a lot. So to make a long story shorter, after a year and a half, she becomes pro-life. And she went through this 3-week period that she didn't tell me about until afterwards. What happened was she came to this realization that her arguments had been beaten soundly. I had the better arguments. And she was too intellectually virtuous to ignore that fact. A lot of us get intellectually lazy. Like, we hear a pretty powerful argument from a view that we don't agree with, and we just kind of shut it off. It's like, I just don't want to deal with that. Not Deanna. She knew. But what was going on for her was she was very afraid of what would happen if she said out loud that she's pro-life. Because all of her other friends are not just pro-choice, they're gay rights advocates. Her Facebook timeline is, like, a very colorful place. You follow? That's her world. And so she was afraid, what happened? Like, would she lose all of her friends, her community? And after 3 weeks, she got over it, and she got a white blank shirt, took a Sharpie to it, and wrote out basically the pro-life argument that we teach on it, went to the National Canadian March for Life, and then came home, stood in front of a full-length mirror, and took a picture of herself wearing the shirt and posted it on Facebook. And on that day, she came out of the closet for the second time in her life, this time as a pro-lifer. So I asked her, what happened, you know? And she talked to me about the arguments that meant the most to her, but then she described this 3-week process of being very afraid of what would happen. So I asked her, what got you over that fear? And she said, well, I had this realization all of a sudden that even if the worst happens, even if I lose all of my friends over this, I knew there'd still be one guy on the other side of the fence welcoming me with open arms. See, Deanna would tell you the scene needed two things to become pro-life, two necessary conditions is how Deanna would put it. To become pro-life, two things that had to be there. Really good arguments and relationship. Like, for her to be able to really hear me and take my argument seriously, as seriously as he did when we first started talking, there needed to be some trust there, some rapport. So you could, like when you're talking to someone, you should be trying to convince them of two things. You're smart and virtuous. Like you're not a bad person, you don't hate women, like that kind of thing. And when you've got those two things, when they understand those two things about you, they make a very powerful chord. So there's two reasons why you ought to do this. There's a pragmatic reason and a principled reason. The pragmatic reason is the obvious one. You're just going to have a greater influence on the people that you're friends with than the people that you, like, intellectually spar with on Facebook. Like, clearly. As my friend Jim Henderson said once, when people like each other, the rules change. They can hear you better. You don't change that many minds on Facebook. I'm sorry to break this to you. You just don't change that many minds on Facebook. Like, we just did a 6-part podcast series on having effective social media dialogues, and the whole first part was, like, basically don't. And here's all the reasons that Facebook makes you, not a very virtuous person. But since you're going to do it anyway, here's 50 tips on how to do it well. But, like, here's what you do. Hey. I've been noticing you've been posting stuff, pro-choice stuff on Facebook, and I think you seem really thoughtful. You're really making me think. Can we do something weird that, like, nobody does, but a good weird? Can I buy you coffee? Can we go to Cup of Joy or Starbucks or whatever, and I just want to learn more about your views. I'm pro-life right now, but I'm open-minded. I would like to hear good pro-choice arguments from actual pro-choice people. I don't want to hear pro-choice arguments just from pro-lifers. I want to hear from you. And if you're interested in my views, I'll be happy to share them with you. Let's do the thing that no one's doing about in politics right now. Like, whatever it's doing right now is just screaming at each other. It's like people get on Facebook, and then pretty soon it's a 200-comment-long feed with 150 people, and it's just like cats. Like, it's just like crazy. Like, can I buy you coffee? Like, that's the way. For a lot of people, and you might be afraid. You might be like, what if they ask me something I don't know how to respond to? What if I get stumped? Great, tell them you're stumped. Admit it. We all get stumped. It's fine. Just say, that's really interesting. I haven't thought about that before. Let me get back to you in a couple of weeks, and then email me. We've got the answers. Be okay. You've got a safety net, you know? Get our course. It's awesome. We've got the answers. It's all there. We've got a great little Facebook group of smart pro-lifers that are working together and answering each other's questions. Like, it's going to be fine. You don't have to answer everything in one day. That'd be too much for them anyway, usually. So, pragmatic argument, you will make a greater difference, impact on people that you're friends with and people that you spar with on Facebook. But it is really important for you to understand the other reason. This is not just an effective tool. It is. It's a really effective tool. But it's not just an effective tool for, like, getting more notches on your pro-life belt. It's just good in and of itself to love people. Like, it is good that there is at least one person in Deanna's life that is just trying his damnedest to be Jesus to her. Very imperfectly, by the way. But trying. My friend Jason Lipajarvi defined love. It's my favorite definition of love I've ever heard, outside of maybe 1 Corinthians 13. He said, love says that it's good that you exist. And insofar as I am able, I will contribute to your happiness, your existence, your flourishing. Love says that it's good that you exist. And insofar as I am able, I will contribute to three things, your happiness, your existence, your flourishing. That's how I feel about Deanna. I want her to be happy. I want her to flourish. Now, Deanna and I disagree about what it would look like for her to flourish, right? I want her to be saved. I don't want her to just be pro-life. I want to hang out in heaven with her, you know. And you know, I've still got time. We're still talking. She just emailed me yesterday. Hey, we need to talk again. Like, we're still talking. We're still friends. But that's what I mean. Like, we should actually love people in a really platonic way, obviously. And there's a reason for that. And I'm going to tell you this story, but I'm just going to tell you, I'm a little bit uncomfortable telling you this story because it feels an awful lot like virtue signaling. Like, I'm not trying to, prove to you that I'm, a good guy. Like, I've got all kinds of problems, but those stories wouldn't be that helpful to you right now. So I'm going to tell you a story. It's a really good story, but it makes me sound pretty awesome, and I'm just going to have to go with that. And trust me when I say I'm not just trying to show off. I had a good moment. Ronnie is another one of my friends who used to be pro-choice. He was in that debate group. She was one of the meanest pro-choice people. Like, she's like calling us names. She thinks we're all total morons. And it took 5 years, but she's pro-life now. She's way pro-life. And so after she became pro-life, we were going back and forth on Facebook Messenger. So it was more like IM is what we were doing at the time. We're messaging each other back and forth. And I knew that she had been going through some pretty rough times personally. So I was asking her about that. And she didn't understand why I was asking her about that, because she sees me as like a pro-life celebrity, which I'm not. That's a contradiction in terms. There's no such thing as a pro-life celebrity. But that's the way she sees me. And so, like, it was weird to her that I'm, like, asking her about her life. And so I'm like, yeah, I really want to hear about what's going on for you. She's like, why would you want that? I said, because I love you. And she said, why would you love me? I said, because I'm following another guy's lead. Because I believe that when Jesus nailed my sins to the cross, I was more different from him than Deanna was from me when she was a pro-choice atheist lesbian in Canada, while we were yet sinners, right? Like, so I'm following that guy's lead. Again, terribly imperfectly. But, like, that's the motivation. That's, like, why I'm doing this. And why we should. And so I just want you to imagine with me for a moment, what would it look like if all the pro-life advocates in Clovis did this? Clovis would change. Like, it would take a while, and it would be messy, because relationships are messy, and people are messy creatures. But Clovis would change. And God would have this opportunity to do just some amazing things through you, which is crazy. And cool at the same time. Nick asked me to give you a few things that you can do. So as I close, I'll just tell you a couple of things you can do if you're excited. One, I mean, the most important thing, get a friend. Get a pro-choice friend, an atheist friend. Like, be Jesus to someone. But as far as other things, I've got a table out there with an email list if you would like to get emails from us, which is usually like our latest article or podcast. It's meant to help you get on our email list. We won't spam you or anything. We send about 2 emails a week. This is kind of the average. We almost never beg for money. If you want to volunteer, if you're good with a computer, even like a little bit, I've got things that you could do for us digitally. Let me know. Talk to me today. And lastly, I'm a little bit in fundraising mode. I need to raise about 2,000 in new monthly gifts this year because it's a good problem to have, but we've got growing pains. We've got 4 full-time staff just in Charlotte right now. And so we need a little bit more office space to be able to pull off some of the next projects that we want to do. So I just need to raise a little bit more. So if you know of anyone who might get excited about this, please talk to me about that. But I just want to close by thanking you. Thank you so much for supporting my ministry and all the things that we're doing. I'm just so grateful that there's a church that is this awesome with a leader as awesome as Nick is. At its helm. I'm really jealous of you. I would so love for Nick to be my pastor. But I'm in Charlotte now. But thank you so much. Would you pray with me? God, you're good. And thank you so much for this particular body of believers. I care so much about you and cares about others and puts that into practice. It doesn't just say that they care about other people, but are actually being generous to people. Thank you for Nick and his leadership. And I just pray that you would bring the right person into our lives. I've just heard so many times after people hear a talk on relational apologetics that suddenly it seems like God brought someone into their life. Would you do that with us? All these things we pray in your name. Amen. God bless you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Josh.
I know when Josh came and spoke to our staff a couple of years ago, I felt so convicted by what he shared, because I realized in so many of the conversations I had with my non-believing friends, especially about faith, I was more trying to win an argument, more trying to prove them wrong than trying to love them. And my first job in any relationship is to love, because that's how Jesus treated me. He didn't come down from heaven to give me a bunch of arguments why I was a sinner. He came to love me and came to love us to show us how we can love as well. And so we're going to sing a song in a moment, but before we do that, I want to give us a moment just to reflect on some of the things Josh has said, to maybe reflect and confess to God the times you've spoken, whether that to be a non-believer, a pro-choice person, or even someone who lives in that same household as you, you've spoken to them, trying to win an argument rather than trying to love them as Jesus loves us. Maybe you want to talk to God right now about a person who is on your heart and who is on your mind that you want to go and speak to and have coffee with and just get to know them and to love them more. Maybe you want to ask God to help you love other people more. Maybe you know you're not a very loving person. You want to be different. You want to grow in that love. And so I'm just going to give you a couple moments now before we sing this song to have some time just one-on-one with the Lord. The only way we can grow to be more loving is to be more amazed at how much we've been loved. God loved us so much that he sent Jesus, his beloved son, to die on the cross for our sins. That is the greatest act of love. And God did that. Jesus did that while we were still sinners, while we were yet his enemies. And so we need to be more amazed by his love if we had to grow in love. So please stand with us as we sing.